And welcome to Stirring the Pot. You're listening to Voice of Vashon 101.9 on beautiful Vashon Island.
On a lovely rainy day.
I know. I'm Linda Nygaard. I'll be your host for the next hour. With me here at the studio table are two food-centric and generally all-around good people sitting
generally.
Here at the table. Tom Conway and Susan Powell. Hello.
Most howdy, howdy.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. So before we get to it, let me just say that I hope you out there in audience land are able to, you know, sip something good and put your feet up and relax while we take you some places that you probably hadn't thought about in a while. Today we're going to have a wild ride as we'll be talking and learning about things like curry and hamburgers and sugar skulls and ancient Aztec queens, cemetery rituals.
Just another day on Vashon.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. So today's All Souls Day. So we're going to talk about that a little later. Right now, we are enjoying a soul cake and a cup of tea. And I made them. I've never made them before. I didn't know anything about them. But they're a traditional All Souls Day treat. Sort of like a cross between a scone and a biscuit and a cookie.
Yeah. They almost remind me a little bit of a fruit bar when I was a little boy in South Carolina.
Kinda, yeah.
We used to have
cherries.
Them. Yeah, yeah, and you'd put a glaze over them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about the icing.
Tom's all about the icing.
I think they kind of deserve a little dunking, too.
I think they're a good dunker.
Very dunkers.
I think they're good dunkers. It took me a minute. I did two recipes, and one had turmeric, and one had saffron. And one had more butter, one had more eggs, and they're very different. And they're very good. I like both of them. Anyway, we can talk about more of that later, but I just wanted to let you know that all of y'all out there ought to get yourself a cup of tea and a biscuit.
If you hear some slurping sounds.
Yeah, forgive us, please. So, Tom, Susan, how have you been? What's been going on?
Well, I'm good. I'm. It's nice to be in the studio on a wonderfully rainy day. And I just got back from dropping my election ballot off at the library, and it's one of my favorite things, you know, the election day. And I used to begrudge the fact that we had mail-in voting because I thought I liked it better when I went to my little polling place and had my little Norman Rockwell moment.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've really changed my attitude about the whole thing. I'm a much better voter.
Because of the library?
No, because of, well, I love the Dropbox because you can take it there anytime. But no, I'm a better voter because I sit down usually on a Sunday before the last 2 days before you have to turn it in, and I'll just go through the ballot and do as much research as I can, and it's like my little homework assignment.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
And you learn a lot more. You learn a lot about, whereas when you just have the ballot in front of you, it's without notes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a better. So I'm just sort of beaming with my vote. My votes have gone in.
Your patriotic
my exactly.
Excellent.
Civic duty done.
My civic duty's done.
What you been doing, Susan?
Oh, not too much. I've been working a bit, and I've got all my garlic finally planted.
Oh,
and
good.
I'm still in the process. My beans have probably not completely dried. So I've got a very funny little rigmarole going with a basket suspended over the wood stove.
I was going to ask you where you dry them. Yeah.
We do not live in a climate that's conducive to drying.
That's right.
And I've got the oven has my peppers in it. I've given up on the peppers. So the oven is dehydrating the peppers.
But they're so beautiful. She got so many beautiful peppers. You just can't believe it. They're beautiful.
And I did love, I just hung the bushes up kind of near the wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
And I did love seeing the red.
It's beautiful.
The color
change. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Reds, you know?
Yeah. Well, I haven't been doing much. I was kind of staying away from the kitchen for a little while because everything I want is pie and cake and ice cream. And I've been trying, you know. But the other day, I decided I really needed some rice pudding. I had to have rice pudding. But I didn't feel like cooking the rice. So I remembered I had.
I love it. And I didn't really want to stir or heat anything. And I had to go, like, get eggs. And why sugar?
Yeah. Gosh. Anyway.
So you went to Cozy Shack. Is that
no,
where you
I
went?
No, I didn't go to Cozy Shack. I went to my freezer where I had some frozen jasmine rice that I got at Trader Joe's.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know, why can't I? It's two cups. Why don't I just open that and make a little custard, mix it in? It'll be good, right? Mm. Stovetop. Well, no.
Not so much.
Not so much. What happened was the custard was beautiful and tasted wonderful, which I should have just made and left that and just drank it.
But you were picking rice beads out of your mouth,
yes,
or something.
Yes, because the whole, every little grain of jasmine rice disintegrated into four parts.
Oh.
So it was like icky tapioca with, it was awful. So that's my success story.
Did you have any wallpapering you needed to do or anything? You could have.
You know, I just put the lid on it and I left it on the counter overnight and I was just mad, you know, and I got up the next morning and opened that little kettle and it's like just a pile of glue sitting there. Uh-huh. It didn't even wiggle. So much for that hack. That did not work.
I know. It's fun when they do work, but sometimes they just don't.
Yeah, I know. They just don't. But no. Anyway, yeah. It made a good story.
It did.
And we're going to talk about, I'd like to talk about a little bit about rice.
Oh, yeah, we will later
in
on.
The program because yeah. That yeah. Kind of ties in with.
I know it does. I know. So, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit about more what's going on in the wider world.
Oh, sure.
Other than your world and my world. You know, in the middle of COVID, I have a friend who is used to traveling all the time. And she was just going stark raving mad because she couldn't fly somewhere and be somewhere different. Mm-hmm. And she decided to take herself to any place that felt different. You know, like sometimes we go to Wajamaya and that feels different. Or you go, you know, just the right. International district. It just feels different, like you've been away. So she was exploring in Tacoma and discovered what she calls Koreatown, which I didn't know was there. And it's Lakewood, actually, which is almost to Spanaway.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took a little trip, three of us, girlfriends, and went over there to explore and see what we could find. And oh my gosh, if you want to go somewhere and have some incredible food, beautiful services, gorgeous people, go to Lakewood. It's south Tacoma way.
What a great tip.
Oh, and you know, we did other things besides eat. They have a little mall there.
But that's okay.
Well, eating is the main. That's the main deal. Yeah. But
oops, not enough time. Got to catch a ferry. We ate.
There's a little mall there that has an India market and a Mexican market and El Salvador market. And there's all those kinds of foods in this little mall. Just wonderful. And then she found a restaurant called The Palace. Can remember that, and we went there for lunch, and they have two sides in that restaurant. One is for the barbecue, traditional Korean barbecue kind of mm-hmm. meal, which I guess involves hours. It's like a long ritual of really good food that keeps coming to the table. And then the other side is where you order your dish and they bring it and serve it to you and you can mm-hmm. get in and out. And that's what we decided to do because we really didn't know how to do the barbecue. And I'm not real familiar with Korean food. I've had a little bit of it, but man, they brought, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 different little condiment dishes and dipping sauces and little sides of cucumber salad. Yeah. And they had this thing they call, not mashed potatoes, potato salad. And I looked it up and it's traditional in Korean eating that they have this potato salad and you taste it and it's sweet. It looks like mashed potatoes. And has little chopped up peas and little chopped up apples in it. And oh my gosh, is it good? I just was surprised, and I'm still surprised.
Mm.
And, you know, I felt like I had been somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it really felt like a day away. Of course, the foot spa helped.
Oh.
And that's right across the street.
I think anything with foot and spa
and
in
spa.
It is it's a good decision.
It was heaven.
Yeah.
But we ate things like seafood stew and kolbi.
Yeah. I'm really fond of Korean pancakes. They have
really great savory
pancakes. And I was lucky enough to go to Korea a couple times. And
lucky you.
Yeah. And one of the things I really liked was it was called panjun, and it was a green onion pancake
mm-hmm.
that they did. And it just was great because it kind of stayed crispy.
Yeah.
And you had all the veggie crunchy inside.
And then a special sauce.
We love a special sauce.
We had that too, and it had seafood in it.
Yeah.
And it's green a great onions. Thing. It was just fabulous. And then
it's easy to make too. If you just look up a recipe for panjun, PAJUN, two words.
so easy and so good.
Yeah.
And it's dinner.
And
it's dinner.
And do you know what? It really is good with kale.
It
really
is?
Good with kale. Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah, like if you chop up kale and green
then put
onions.
It in there with the green onions.
Because the kale gets kind of crispy like it does as a chip, you know?
Well,
yeah. I mean, I'm all about texture. I like the texture of it.
I looked up the recipe for the sauce, and basically it's a sweet soy sauce
with
a little bit of sesame in it.
Well, that,
you know?
That was quite a little adventure. Now, I didn't go to Tacoma or anything. I did go into Seattle and have breakfast once, but because I was helping a friend who needed a ride.
Good.
But the one thing I did hear about that sort of isn't related whatsoever, but I found it really fun, a fun story. And you may have heard of it because it's gotten some good circulation because it sort of harkens back to what I think of like sort of like old Seattle vibe. And Canlis, you know, I think they have been in business for 71 years.
Have they stayed open?
They have for 71 years.
Wow.
And because of the pandemic, really, they got super creative. They had everything like they had parking lot venues where you'd go and get it. There'd be the crab shack and you'd crab. Or they had to-go dinners that were like their old school menus, like prime rib, twice baked potatoes, you know, and you
cream spinach
and you'd go pick that up and it'd be like 100. And it was for Canlis, it was reasonable. It's like 125 for a party for four people or something.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but this last week they lost power and they'd never lost power. And so they had four private parties in their different, banquet rooms. And then they had, the restaurant was full and they're like, okay. And they said, the owners are the third generation, the two sons that own it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were interviewed, they said, well, God bless our piano player. He didn't miss a beat. Like the lights went out. He kept playing. They popped, decided to get the champagne out and people were, he said, were really surprisingly kind and agreeable to the fact that they were sitting in this, you know, this wonderful restaurant with the kitchen that couldn't cook anything.
Oh.
So they called Dick's Drive-In, which of course, I think that's those are my two favorite restaurants. If I had the high end, would be Canlis,
story.
And Dick's Drive-In would be the other one. And so they called Dick's, and Dick said, "Yeah, we can bring you some burgers." So they brought over 100 burgers, and they distributed them with the champagne, and people continued to sort of stay
Rock
there
on.
As long as they wanted. And they got as many candles lit as they could, and
wow,
and it was just a really sweet. That's one of those sweet Seattle stories.
Well, it is.
Yeah,
very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Well, it's sort of the community food thing, too. You know, everybody's hungry and everybody knows what's good.
Yeah.
If you can't have Canlis, let's have Dick's.
Yeah. Can I tell you a little side note to that, too?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Well, what's so great, another thing about when I was looking at this story to sort of verify that it actually happened, there was another great story, I'll make it really quick, where another thing that happened with Canlis is they mistakenly sent out their menu, their newsletter menu about what they were doing that week and how you order with everyone's email on it. There wasn't a blind copy. And so everyone saw it and they were just mortified because basically their entire mailing list was exposed to the people. And so if anyone went reply all, the whole
goodness.
Mailing list goes. So of course somebody had to hit reply all and go, you know, for $125, because they give you instructions to reheat the meal.
Goodness. Oh my goodness.
So somebody sort of snarkily goes, well, you know, for $125, I would think I would get it piping hot or something. And so then the other comments came on top of that. And somebody said, well, you know, if you have trouble spending $125 on a meal from Canlis, maybe you won't have a problem spending $125 to donate to Food for America. So to cut a long story short, it actually sort of didn't devolve. It kind of evolved into a really great conversation. And they raised people on the mailing list, raised $10,000 for Food for America.
How wonderful.
And the guy who was griping at the first, he donated $250. So it was another great little story about, you know, human nature that,
right.
We do good.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of a funny thing that happened at the high school. They were having a problem that, you know, the meals there are really, really good. And the kids kind of fan out. And they were having a problem with And we sort everything, you know, this is for pigs.
Hang on 1 second, because I think our audience doesn't know that you are teaching there now sometimes.
I substitute teach at the high
substitute
school,
teaching. She's not just lurking
around. She just shows
the
around the hallway. Hey, is there a lunchroom?
Yeah, what's lunch?
Do you have any kids
I smell
here?
Lima beans.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
They having trouble with the kids throwing the forks in with the pig food. So there were, you know, and it's expensive to just keep buying forks. We don't want to use plastic.
Right.
So so the vice principal got on the, sent out an email about they was going to distribute chopsticks. We're going to go to throw away chopsticks, the little red packages with the chopsticks. But he forgot to, he included every student saw who all got the thing. And for about a half an hour before lunch, you could just hear peals of laughter. It was so funny. The kids jumped right on that. And I can't even remember some of the things that they were saying. But, you know, they'd start laughing. And I'd be like, come on, you guys, get back to work. You know, and then I discovered what they're laughing at. And the whole school was in an uproar because of the jokes about the chopsticks.
Can the pigs eat the chopsticks, I wonder? Was that the...
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, because there's paper. You know, it's a big... thing, you know, I mean, we all should be recycling everything,
right?
But things can get, you know, and they're always in a hurry to, you know, to get out and hang out and everything. So
the pigs and their chopsticks.
But, yeah, but it made me think because I looked at the menu, and today they're having French onion soup.
Oh, good.
With a Parmesan croûte on top.
Really? Is there an age limit to be a student?
What's the free lunch program
exactly. They used to go, I think it's like only $5 a lunch. And all summer you could go and get
in the summertime you can. Yeah.
And I don't know about if that's going on now, but or how they would plan for that. And then tomorrow is a teriyaki rice bowl that everybody loves.
Mm-hmm.
And then Friday is chilaquiles.
Chilaquiles.
God, that's really great good. Food for a teenager and also for a 64-year-old dapper gentleman.
There you go.
Well, go volunteer to sweep the floors or something.
Well, yeah, know, okay.
I'm very fussy about my chilaquiles. So I'm working on Friday.
I bet you are.
I am going to be down there.
Will you report back?
Yeah.
Of course I will.
Hey, that's really good. Please do tell us. And let's talk a little bit about what's in season. What are we doing now in the garden? You guys are the gardeners. What's going on?
The garden is a sad little place of rot and decay.
You have a sad garden.
I have a sad garden. It's. I just look at it and I think, okay, well, I've got at least till April or March maybe to get something going here. I don't have to hurry too hard. Plus, I just sort of leave everything to kind of rot back.
For the birds and the worms.
Yeah, for the things to eat it, and it usually rots back. Yeah, so.
So it's virtuous.
Yeah, so now it's just I spend money. I go through catalogs, and, you know, COVID has really beefed up the gardening industry in the United States.
It has.
This is, this is just my opinion, but it's crazy because you used to have to wait till after Christmas to get all the seed catalogs and the nursery catalogs and fruit trees and seeds. And now they're on it because they sell out. Like, the idea that these nurseries are selling out of fruit trees in October is insane. That never happens.
Right.
So people are really into, you know, the COVID gardening.
Self-sufficiency.
Self-sufficiency, yeah.
And fear of going to the store. You know,
true.
I mean, yeah. I'd rather grow my own.
And needing to occupy their time close to home with an enjoyable little retreat.
And working from home, the people that work from home now can spare an hour a day to go out and...
Well, you know, the other thing that's really taken off besides gardening due to the pandemic is the home food delivery services. HelloFresh and Blue Apron.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? I kind of just seems like so much waste. And I
it does to me.
It seems like to have 5 packages to make spaghetti just
seems
but
at the same
goofy.
Time, my daughter-in-law got some from I can't remember the name of I should check and know what I'm talking about, but hers comes frozen and it comes in paper containers. Mm-hmm. And so she puts the meals in the freezer and then it's a week at a time. And then, you know, at night they come home and fix it. So there's really very little waste with that.
Yeah.
With that
and
one.
And plus it really is. It's sort of unfair of me to say that just because it's,
don't
excuse me, I just broke my teacup. because you know, I don't have a family of four, well, and I'm not working, yeah. And I mean, there's a beautiful thing. Convenience to that, and especially if you can eat healthy. So
and some of it's pretty good.
I'm just
good.
Gonna maybe yeah. shut my yapper then
no,
on that.
I
one.
Think it's all right. I think it's all right, but I'm not crazy about it either.
Yeah,
you know. But you know, what do you do if you don't want to cook?
But we all are people that love to cook.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So, what else is going on in the seasonal thing?
Well, this time of year, when the rains return to the Pacific Northwest.
How romantic.
It is it. Also, the fungi are alive. And so this is the time of year where I get all excited because the chanterelles return. And if not in the grocery store, maybe underfoot in the mm-hmm. forest. And it's the only mushroom I feel comfortable foraging. You know,
and have you? Do you?
Yeah, but I also I take an expert with me.
Yeah,
you know, because it has to do with. There's one other one that sort of looks like it, but it has to do with the ribs underneath it that tell you. One has what they call like a cut rib, and the other one has a folded rib. But we've never seen the one that's supposed to be bad for you. So
oh well, that's good.
Yeah, and they usually sort of pop up under the moss and the needles and. And you see like a bump and then you pull off.
Do you know, I've never been foraging for mushrooms.
Yeah.
And I think I better do that.
Yeah.
I better do that. How do you like to cook them? How do you like to eat them?
I think that just the best way is, and I think chanterelles, a lot of, you can freeze them, but everything I've read and everything I've experienced mm-hmm. when I've cooked is that they're better cooked before you freeze them.
Before you freeze them. Yeah.
They have they sometimes get an acridity to them. If they're raw when you mm-hmm. freeze them. So I saute them in butter. And then,
you know,
that's what I do.
But wait, that you stole my thunder.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because that's what I do.
I saute them in butter. Yeah, it's the best.
It's the best.
Butter's
the
better.
Butter's yep. better. And if you got a chanterelle, how do you do them, Susan?
Oh, I basically don't.
Oh, okay.
I have. And I like them, but I unfortunately have a daughter who...
Does
that
like
I
mushrooms.
Live with her. She doesn't care for mushrooms.
Do you put them in? Do you ever make risotto with them?
Yes, I do make. I used to make risotto, mm-hmm. with them. And one thing I like about that is that you when you trim them, you can save all those pieces. Not even you know. You, mm-hmm. I mean, you want to brush off the dirt and stuff, but save the parts that you aren't really going to eat,
mm-hmm.
And use that for the stock.
Oh, nice.
That you're gonna cook your risotto. And then I do that with my favorite fall vegetable is butternut squash.
Mm-hmm.
And I make butternut squash risotto the same way with the peelings and the seeds. Makes an excellent, excellent stock. Mm.
Okay.
And then I usually beef that, well, chicken that up with some.
Chicken that up? Beef it up.
That's cute.
So will you walk me through a risotto? Make me some, in my mind, make me some squash risotto.
Oh, wow.
What
okay.
do we do?
And can you make pudding out of it?
And what's the hack? Uh-huh.
Well, the hack is if you used any of the three rices that are perfect for risotto,
uh-huh.
you can't make risotto out of a hard grain rice.
What do you make it out of?
It's a soft grained rice. It's very starchy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, well,
is
think
this
about
arboreal,
sushi.
Arboreal rice?
Yeah, think about a sushi rice,
yeah.
But there's three kinds that are primarily for risotto. Arborio is the one that's the most common.
Right.
And makes excellent rice pudding.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
as you stir
well,
it.
Well, I've done rice pudding with Arborio. Yeah, I just didn't want to cook the rice.
And then the other one is Carnaroli, which is from Italy. And the third is Violone Nano, which is
what was the second one?
Carnaroli.
Carnaroli.
So those are not as common. Like you can get Arborio.
I've never heard of those.
In just about any bulk bin.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. So what you do is... You make your stock, or you have your stock mm-hmm. boiling. This is really, really important because you never want to add, cold water to the rice while it's cooking. It'll make it seize up again.
Okay.
So you need, for one cup of rice, you need at least 4 cups of broth.
Okay.
And you start by sautéing some onions in a shallow pan, like a skillet, in butter. But you could put a little bit of olive oil in there too.
Yeah, I'm just adding plus more butter.
But you're not going to brown them. You're not going to brown the onions. You're just going to wilt them. And then you add, if I'm making butternut squash, I add, and I would do this with the chanterelles too, about half of what I was going to use in the whole recipe, I would put in after the onions are soft and start to start to wilt them down, because you want them to just really ooze into the rice.
Okay.
And then you put your rice in and you stir to coat all the grains. And then you splash it with a little white wine and you get a nice kind of sound.
I love that sound.
The sounds of
cooking. I like that too.
Great. And then you start ladling in the broth and you stir. And when you, it's the broth.
So
is
am I ladling?
You're ladling a scoop and
consistently
then you're
stirring. Scoop and stir.
And you stir. And when you drag the spoon across the pan, if the rice and the liquid doesn't roll back in the middle, you leave a bare space.
Right.
That's when you add the next scoop.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you just keep doing that. And the grains of the rice are dissolving and making that creaminess. When I think it's about halfway there, then I'd put the rest of the chanterelles or the rest of the butternut squash.
How do you feel about, because I've only seen this on TV cook shows where you get a nose turn from some chefs where some use, say, to add Parmesan and some say don't, or do you add cheese to yours, or
as a finish? Right.
You don't cook it
at the end. Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a little grady-grade on top?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or shaky-shake.
Shaky-shake, grady-grade.
Truman O'Brien is sitting here with us.
And I forgot to say, for a lot of, I always put a pinch of saffron. About the saffron. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say Truman is sitting here with us because I need him.
Because we love him.
And we love him, and we need him on the board.
Earlier I spoke about we have some technical issues that we're dealing with here at the station.
They're called Linda, Tom, and
no, you guys. I wish our problems was as mild as that. I'm telling you, I got all excited about risotto because I make risotto and I love risotto. I use the carnaroli rice myself to do it.
Are you buying that? Do they have it at Thriftway?
Yeah, it comes in
in the rice aisle.
Yeah, and it comes in a little cloth bag.
Cloth bag.
Yeah.
Oh, so does the Spanish, the bomba.
Yeah. Same
for paella.
Deal.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, I have a spring risotto that I do with fresh asparagus. And I use a chicken stock, and I put the stems in the chicken stock when it's boiling, so that it infuses with that.
Yeah.
And then at the very end that you were talking about, the same process, at the very end I have lemon juice and the lemon zest. And at the very end, at the last couple of scoops, you put all the stock, the stems that were in the stock, and the fresh spears in, and you mix all of that in with the lemon juice and the lemon zest and fresh mint.
That sounds
great.
Really,
and
really
Parmesan,
good,
I'm telling you, it's out of this world.
And crazy unique. Like, I think none of us have had that. Have
I'm going to say prove it.
Yeah.
I can do it.
Yeah, I know you
count down to asparagus, baby.
But you have to do it in the spring, obviously.
I know. We have to wait till asparagus season.
All right, I had to throw my two cents in.
Thank you, Truman.
That was a good two cents. I'd say that was like a quarter's worth right there.
Yeah, right there, yeah. But one other thing about it is that at this time of the year when it's so cold, it's just lovely to stand stove and just be peaceful.
And probably
stir and enjoy the smell and the heat.
Just as good the next day or not better.
You can make risotto cakes.
Those are good too.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Wow. Well, now I'm hungry.
Now we're hungry.
For sure. I want something creamy and good, but I don't want to cook.
I'm glad we steered. I'm glad we went from bad rice stories to good rice stories.
Isn't that nice how that worked out?
That was much better.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
You were talking to me the other day about some historic salad fetish that you have.
I think fetish is a little strong.
Well, fetish might be too strong of a word.
I'm not wearing romaine on my privates or anything. No, it's just gone.
But it was that meat dress we were worried about the other day.
You know,
it's those apple cheeks.
My apple cheeks. That's pretty funny. You know, that's one of the problems when you live on Vashon. Nobody tells you that you shouldn't be doing something.
That's right, because they think it's normal.
Oh, isn't he cute?
Isn't he cute?
Wearing that raw chicken on his head. Yeah. That's so sweet.
I wonder what the message is.
What is Tommy Salmonella? Okay, so where? Oh, salads. You know, I was talking about one of my favorite fall salads, and it was the first time I had it. Of course, it was at home, and I thought, you know, why were you feeding me these other awful salads when this one existed? And it was simply a Waldorf salad. Oh. And it was kind of a treat because in those days, you know, grapes were a little more seasonal. You know, in the dark ages when I was a child, you weren't getting grapes all the time. So when you got grapes, it was a big deal in the fall or in around Thanksgiving is when you'd make it. But the original Waldorf salad was, of course, made at the Waldorf Astoria, and it was created by their maitre d', who was a Swiss immigrant. And he had a great little story. He actually became as much of a celebrity as the people who dined at the Waldorf.
Because of his salad.
He was such a character he loved the challenge of setting up. Like J.P. Morgan would come to him and go, I need something for 40 of my best friends. I want it to be, you know, out of this world. So at the Gilded Age, he was the man to do it. He was the purveyor of parties at the Waldorf. But on a more humble front, he produced the Waldorf salad, and it was simply butter lettuce and celery and apples and mayonnaise and a high quality mayonnaise, homemade mayonnaise. And that was it. And then, and it was served for their very first event, which was a charity event for St. Mary's Children's Hospital in 1893.
Oh, God bless them.
And so it became such a popular item. It just took off. And so then it sort of morphed into what it is today, which is also includes usually split grapes and walnuts. But now the new Waldorf Astoria, which is sort of a condominium luxury place. I don't even know if it's a true hotel. It might be a membership hotel. But their chef there now does it with, the butter crunch lettuce, julienned, either Granny Smith or Fuji apples.
Oh, julienned.
The grapes, I think there's a red grape and candied walnuts. And then he makes this crazy dressing that sounds really good. It's champagne vinegar, truffle oil, I think a raw egg, like a mayonnaise. He basically emulsifies a super fancy mayonnaise and does it for the dress. But Thanksgiving is coming up, and I will be making.
Are you gonna make that?
Oh yeah.
Oh, good, good, good.
And the celery adds a nice crunch.
Does it ever have dates in it?
No.
That's not a Waldorf salad.
No, that does not.
Yum! I want that.
You could put dates in it because you know a Waldorf salad is American.
Yeah.
As you can get, you can make it whatever you want.
Or not.
Very democratic.
Well, let's switch gears here a little bit. And Susan, you were, we were talking, I don't know, some time ago about spices and spice blends. And now it's time for Susan's spicy spiel, which we haven't done. I said that.
Spicy spiel, that was nice.
Yeah, was
you know,
good.
If you were a spice girl, what would you be? There's like, what is it? There's like sporty spice, nasty spice. What would your spice be?
I'd be Ms. Masala.
Ms. Masala spice.
Ms. Masala. Uh-huh. Well, that would be good.
Well, I was thinking when you asked me about the spices, it took me back to when I was first learning how to cook. So we're talking many, many years ago.
Okay.
And I lived, the first apartment or first place I lived not with my family was on South Mission Beach in San Diego. And I had a teensy tiny little apartment. And I went with my neighbor, who later on became my husband, down the street to get a beer at the bar. We ran into a man called Borneo Charlie that he had known from before.
In San Diego.
Borneo Charlie.
On Mission Beach in San Diego. And Borneo Charlie was born in the center of the island of Borneo, which is huge and rainforested. And he had heard about the big water. And so he set off in his teenage years, I don't know, 16, maybe 18, to go and see the water. So he journeyed on his own through the forest, and he got to the ocean. And he stayed back in the woods, and he watched what was happening. There was a little fishing village nearby, and the men would take the boats out, and then they would be gone, and then they'd come back, and they'd pull the boats back up on the beach, and they'd take the fish. And he was like, watch that for a couple of days. And he thought, I think I should try that. So he took a boat And he got in and he rode out. And of course, he had to wait till it was dark so he wouldn't be seen.
He was running away?
And he was, no, he just wanted to go out and see if he could come back with some fish, I think. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
He got into a current and he didn't really know what he was doing. You know, he'd never been in a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in a current and it just took him out to sea. And he ended up in the shipping lanes.
Rescued, oh my Lord.
Rescued by a freighter.
This is making me nervous.
And that was how he started his career in the merchant marine and traveled all over the world.
Oh my goodness.
So
what a story.
He was probably like around in his 50s at this time.
Wow.
And so he was full of stories.
Well, so
anyway,
what...
he asked, you know, we were talking and I said, well, I was just learning how to cook. And that was kind of what I was really interested in right then. And he said, oh, well, it turns out that as he rose through the ranks in the merchant marine, he cooked.
Mm-hmm.
And he just lit up. He was like, I'll teach you how to cook. I'll make chicken curry. I'll show you how to make chicken curry. And he said, I'll bring everything. You make the rice. That was like, oh, really?
Uh-oh.
Good
but
job
I found
you
Uncle
didn't
Ben's.
Ask me to.
Uncle Ben's helped me out. And he told Peter, you bring the beer, and I'll bring everything else. Sure enough, the next night, he shows up. He's got a big old dented pot. He's got two big bags of groceries. And he comes into this little kitchen. I mean, really, like a little tiny, two chairs and a little Formica table, mm-hmm. a little stove, a little sink, a little counter. I give him a cutting board. He takes out of the first thing out is a cleaver, giant cleaver, which, of course, I've never even seen anything like that before. And he takes out a whole chicken. And bam, 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 he cuts that chicken up. It was amazing. He knew where every joint was. You
just
know,
fast.
He wasn't
yeah.
just fast as all get out.
Mm-hmm.
But each thigh became, he chopped into two. The breasts each became three. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing mm-hmm. that was whole was a drumstick. And he's pouring oil in the pan and he's throwing in the chicken. And then it's onions and lots of onions go in. And... a whole bunch of stuff. Put some water in. I think there was bouillon cubes, tomatoes.
Yeah.
And did he go by Borneo Charlie? Like, he'd go like, hi, I'm Borneo Charlie?
Well, I don't know that.
Okay, just wondered.
That's what we called him. Uh-huh. Anyway, he gets to the part about the curry.
The spices. Yeah.
And he reaches into the bag, and he gets one of those little red and white shilling spice things.
Mm-hmm.
Like you and I would, you know, they have the thing where you can shake.
The curry powder?
Or they have the thing, the curry powder that you could put a spoon in and get a level teaspoon or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Not Charlie. He takes the whole top off. In goes the whole can.
For one chicken.
In my memory, I think that there were two cans and a box of raisins. And it was...
Wow.
It was curry.
Oh. Did you like it? Was it
a taste treat
to you?
Yeah.
What a story. What
but
a story.
It made me think about spice blends.
Yeah.
Because some people think that curry is a thing.
Like
basil
spice.
Might be a thing.
Right.
Or nutmeg might be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's a blend of so many spices that was more or less invented by the British. Was totally invented by the British when they went to India.
And
they didn't know what to call all those things that were made with a different
and that
blend.
They loved.
So someday we'll go into all of those.
That'd be great.
It just
That's
made
a
me
fabulous
think about
story.
What I really learned from Borneo Charlie was just go ahead and do it and be fearless.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just enjoy it. I mean, he was having the best time and so were we, but Pierre was involved.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Susan. Thank you for that. I have one short little curry story. It's a really short one. When I was about 19 or 20, I lived in... probably closer to 21. I lived in the mountains in Colorado. And there was a woman who lived down the street. She was probably 70 at the time, and I was in my 20s, and I just thought she was hilarious. She was a very funny woman, and we drank a lot of wine together. And she liked those big bottles of Mogan David. What's that big, cheap wine?
Everybody? Francia Brothers.
Something. I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
But anyway, she liked this big, cheap one. Hardy Burgundy. That's what it was, Gallo.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had big jugs of that all the time. And one time she said, why don't you come on over for dinner? I said, all right. So we went over and we had about 3-4 glasses of wine first of that nasty, nasty wine. And I said, what are we having for dinner? And she said, oh, I'm making you my special chicken curry. And I said, oh, fabulous. That sounds great.
So she showed me how she does it, and she got her cake pan out, like a half sheet pan, and she put raw chicken pieces on it, and then she poured about a, you know, quart or so of hearty burgundy over it, and then she dumped a whole can of curry powder over that, and then she put it in the oven, and she said, that's going to be curry.
She must have been a relative of Charlie's.
Something.
Was it edible?
You know, it was kind of good.
Oh, really?
It was kind of weird.
Wow.
It wasn't what I would call curry, but yeah. I mean, you could taste the curry. Yeah, it was interesting. You know, it was. I made it a couple times.
Curry
after
was
that.
Super exotic. Like my mom would make it. We would have my favorite part of the curry was the stuff you got to put on it. So my mom would have little bowls of coconut and raisins and Mr. Peanut dry roasted peanuts.
Oh,
chopped
Mr.
up.
Peanut, of course.
But then I was informed that those were not single serving sizes. That they were. My mother goes, "That's to just put a little bit on top." And I'm thinking, like, "Oh, it's just that was my peanut bowl, and that was my coconut bowl, and that was my
no sprinkle for this guy." No. Well, that's thank you for that. That curry stuff is really interesting. Now I want some curry.
Yeah. My favorite's Penang. I like Penang curry. The Thai
too.
Curry.
I like all of it. Well, I like all of it.
I like them all too. Yeah.
So, dun da da.
What are we up for?
It's time for the main course.
The main course.
The main course. We're done with table talk.
Tater tots?
Table talk.
Oh, tater tots.
Do you want some tater tots?
Courage, please.
You know, tater tots. Let's have that. Okay. So today, seriously, we're talking about All Souls Day. And All Souls Day comes at the end of almost a week-long celebration from everything from, you know, Halloween to Day of the Dead to the whole thing. And All Souls Day is at the very end of it all, and it's the day that all the souls come back. There's a day reserved when the children's souls come back, and there's a day reserved for something else, I forget. But this is the day when the children come back and that they can talk to their family. So Day of the Dead, I kind of, to tie this all together, I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit about Day of the Dead. But Dia de los Muertos is an example.
Caramilla.
Ah, yes. It's a pre-Hispanic cultural tradition, but, you know, it's Aztec and Christian melded together. And the conquistadors in the 16th century noticed that the Dia de los Muertos celebrations they were having. And, of course, they were pagan. And really what they were, they weren't remembering the loved ones who passed, but they were worshiping the queen of the underworld. And she has a name, you know, a mile long that I can't say. But she was the protector of the dead. And their job, the people's job, was to honor her. And they were paying homage to the queen of the underworld. But part of her job was to protect the bones of the dead. So they had to protect her so the bones would be protected. But because they believed that the bones brought new life to the earth. But in order for the bones to bring new life to earth, they had to be stolen. So somebody stole. This is a
That's
big deal.
Craziness.
Yeah. So then somebody steals the bones, right? So they steal the bones. And once a year on All Souls Day, she comes back to check that those bones, who are now new human beings, are being treated well. And so she's a guardian for the old bones, even when they're new bones. So that, you know, there's a lot of history in there that we're going to skip over.
Kind of a thing.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Symbolically. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But that's where the first Aztec celebration was observed. It was in the 1500s by the conquistadors. And they then, you know, the priests came over and all that other stuff happened. So they melded the Catholic with the Aztec. And the Aztec really kind of won, really, because the priests thought the Aztecs were minding them and doing the Christian things. And really, when you look at the symbols of Day of the Dead, you see that there are some Christian symbols in there. There's a cross every now and then and that kind of thing, but it's mostly pagan. And in the Mexican tradition, they go through about a week of preparing the altar. And you've seen those altars, right?
The ofrendas.
Yeah, ofrendas, thank you. And, you know, they start with putting a glass of water on, I think, and then they have a picture of the person, and then the next day there might be marigolds, and the marigolds are thought to bring the souls in because of their unique scent. They can find their way home if they can smell the marigolds, so they can get in the right place. And the skull, think about the skull. We've all seen those sugar skulls.
Yeah.
Those are made with sugar and meringue, and they're very, very sweet to symbolize the sweetness of life.
Have you ever been to a ceremony in Mexico by chance? Or
yes.
Oh, really?
I got really lucky enough to do that. Yeah, I got to go to Oaxaca.
Oh, and great
spent,
spot.
Oh, so beautiful there. And I spent 3 days with a Mexican family down there, wow. And it was really pretty incredible. This was in the early 2000s.
On Day of the Dead?
On Day of the Dead.
On
yeah,
Day
I was
the
there
Dead.
For the week before.
Uh-huh.
And then we all, you know, I stayed with them those 3 days while they did all the preparations. And man, oh man, there's a lot of cooking. You have to have mole. And you know what a mole, I mean, all the work in a mole.
Yeah.
And so you have to have that. You have to have mezcal. You have to have chocolate. And then, so they spend the week doing mm-hmm. this. And then on the final night, which is Day of the Dead, it's not All Souls Day, it's Day of the Dead, they eat and be merry and drink on the, drink and eat on the graves, and they've cleaned the graves up. And, you know, I think Day of the Dead, I think Americans, a lot of Americans, not most probably, know about Day of the Dead, and they know some of that history. But what I found really interesting is that there is other history in other places like Ireland. The ancient Irish, there we go, sorry, believed that the dead were repositories of wisdom and lore, and that during this period of time, this All Souls Day, they could come to speak to their descendants. And so the ancestors would bestow two gifts to the people. One was the ability to remember old days and traditions, and the other one is to never forget how we are always linked to our bloodline. So the whole human tribal thing. And the Ireland children would go soul caking, and they go door to door to beg for soul cakes, which is what we're eating here. And what they did was they begged for a soul cake. Soul cake is a song. And if they were given a soul cake, it was the same as being given a prayer.
Oh.
So it's a thought to be the first link to Halloween trick-or-treating, where the kids go door-to-door. I don't know. And it's just kind of evolved, you know. But that's what I know about Ireland. And there's some other countries, too.
Oh, well, you know,
Tom,
it's funny.
You're on.
No, it's funny because I was what was the country? Oh, Hungary. Like, it's... because I was hungry, and I was thinking hungry.
Yeah.
No,
rice.
It's really interesting how each culture has their own mm-hmm. traditions that are very different, but then in this sort of crazy way, there's a real thread of commonality about the purpose of these ceremonies, like what you're talking about. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's pretty much like in Hungary, for instance. It was a day. All Saints Day was a day where you were forbidden to work, because if you were, especially if you were a farmer, because they felt like if you plowed the fields or sowed seeds, that in some way you were attacking the dead. I mean, you kind of wonder how they came up.
Like, how did they think of that stuff? How did they?
Exactly. They also thought like you weren't allowed to sow, because they felt that anytime you sowed on that day,
mm-hmm.
you were stabbing.
You're stabbing the dead.
The dead. I know.
Those women had it right. They didn't want to sow that day.
That's
they
right.
Used to
exactly.
know.
They go, hey, I got this
I'm
idea.
Stab your dead.
Let's make up these little things that will keep us from working.
Well, you know, there's a song about soul cakes. And it is, Sting does a wonderful version if you want to look it up online. I'd love to play it for you, but that means we'd have to pay fees and that kind of stuff, and I don't want to do that. So, but I want to read you the first verse. It is, a soul, a soul, a soul cake. Please, good missus, a soul cake, an apple, a pear, a plum, or a cherry. Any good thing to make us all merry. One for Peter, two for Paul, and three for him who made us all. And then there's several other verses mm-hmm. where they talk about going
and
down.
And is that a British song?
Yes. Yes, it is. And, you know, this is where the ha'penny will do. The lanes are very dirty. My shoes are very thin. I've got a little pocket to put a penny in. If you haven't got a penny, a ha'penny will do. If you haven't got a ha'penny, it's God bless you. That's the mm-hmm. last verse of the soul cake song.
Nice.
And then there's a verse in there, too, about blessing the house, even though you're rich. We hope that nothing ever happens to you. The dogs
or your
at
cattle.
Your door.
Or your cattle.
Yeah, your cattle, what, yeah. You know, all those things. May all these good things come to you.
I think it's just,
cake,
I
just
love
a soul
it.
Cake. So go down to the cellar and see what you can find.
You better take two of those, Tom.
Those are really good. I like them. And
yeah,
just because
you
can't, because you can't see what they look like because we're on radio.
Mm-hmm.
Think of like they're a round cookie that are like a rolled out cookie that you cut into a circle, and the circle has little rickrack edges, you know, sort of like a
fruited sort of, yeah.
Yeah. And then they have raisins
the
in
wreath,
them.
The wreath.
The
of
wreath.
Of thorns.
What?
The wreath of thorns.
Oh, the wreath of thorns. I wasn't paying attention
I
earlier,
I don't know
was
if that's
I?
True or not. I just
yeah,
made that up.
I like it.
Okay.
And then the then there's raisins. There's raisins. It almost looks like shortbread, but it's not. The texture is not the same. The texture is more cakey, but kind of cookie.
It's a cross between a biscuit, a scone, and a cookie.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's all three.
Like, they're really good.
But the English biscuit is a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's round and it's kind of hard, but it's really good. I kind of like the turmeric and all the allspice. It's got lots of cloves and that kind of stuff in it. And I used dried cherries simply because I didn't have any raisins.
Ah.
So there's dried cherries in there.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed them. I just thought we should, you know, have something on the soul.
No, right? I like the fact that you guys bake stuff and bring it in. That's awesome.
So, Susan, you told me you knew something about Italy.
Yeah, they have cookies. They have cookies in Italy, too.
They do? What are they?
They're called Ossa dei Morti, Bones of the Dead. And they're like a rolled dough,
mm-hmm.
and then you cut it into lengths, and then you kind of bend it, and you use a fork to make the knuckle places. And then you've smushed the end and you put an almond.
Oh, so they look like
they look fingers.
Fingers.
Yeah, some of them look like fingers. Some of them are crispy. It's all different, mm-hmm. you know, lots of different recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are soft. And then in some places, well, in all of Italy, evidently, Tutti I Santi is Saints Day. And that's like a legal holiday. And everybody goes to church, and the Pope does a
mm-hmm.
big mass,
mm-hmm.
and then people go to the graveyard, and they tend the graveyard, and visit the graves, and they make pumpkin risotto.
They do?
Which I would say is like, you know, I don't make
love
pumpkin,
that.
I make butternut squash, because I prefer it. But
mm-hmm.
And then on All Souls Day is not like a legal holiday, but it's to remember all the poor mortal people, the regular Joes
mm-hmm.
who have passed in the year. So if at dinner time there will be empty places set.
Oh yeah, they do that. Yeah,
yeah.
That is a common thing.
Yeah,
you set a place set for the deceased,
the nearly you recently departed.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not everybody you ever knew who died,
yeah.
but
or your great grandparents or
yeah.
whatever. But
yeah.
And then in Sicily, the kids put their shoes outside the house, and they get filled with candy.
How fun.
On All Souls
How cute.
Day. And in Sardinia, they go door to door and they say morti, morti, which is death, death. And they're given sweets.
Death, death?
Yeah, dead, dead. I know it
dead,
seems
dead.
Very
Ooh,
kind of macabre.
Macabre,
but
yeah.
Yeah. But, and then the other thing that's interesting with the Hungary is that they don't, there's a thing about not, about, an association between fava beans and death.
And that's, no I have the
again.
Same association with that and lima beans.
You do me a fava. Yeah. Leave
well,
them out.
And evidently, well, Pythagoras said, it started with Pythagoras.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why, but they think that they're the soul, the dead are in the earth, and
mm-hmm.
they can come during this time of the year, they can come from the earth up through the hollow stem of the fava bean. And then when you see its blossom, it's white and
yeah.
it's stained with a purpley black color.
Uh-huh.
And that's the mark that a soul has
that a soul
come,
transcended.
That a soul came. Yeah.
Oh
and
my
is,
goodness.
Is, yeah. So they're kind of scary.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I don't think if my soul was going to transcend, I would pick a different plant.
Than a fava bean?
Than a fava
oh,
bean. You got
too.
It. Yeah.
Me
what
too.
Would you pick?
Well, it's iris,
not,
maybe.
You're not going to be. It's you're not going to be the fava bean. You're going to exit through the.
Oh, exit.
Yeah,
through.
But I don't want to even smell it.
On the way up.
Yeah. All that fava bean goo in there.
I would exit through a peanut butter jar, maybe.
Oh,
that's
that might
what
be good.
That might be really good. Oh, no. Next time I open a jar, I'm going to be very afraid.
Tom, what are you doing in there? you know, one thing, I'm going to go back to the Ireland thing. In All Souls Day, you had to sweep your house in the olden days in Ireland. You had to sweep top to bottom because it gets rid of all the old energy and all the negative energy. And then you
that's why my descendants left. They had to house
is.
Clean.
Yeah, it probably is. Well, you can call them back. Just get a new broom.
All right.
You just need a new broom. Anyway, then they would put a bowl of water on the table after the house was clean because the spirits are going to be thirsty. It's a long journey, and they put the water there so that they could do that. And then they go visit the cemetery. And they clean the grave, and they do, you know, say prayers.
Because nobody's home there. They're all getting a drink.
Well, yeah, right, right. They're leaving them back at the house.
And that was a tradition, too. Like in America, before we became so distant from, you know, death as far as celebrating it, you know, I even know, like, my great-grandparents and my grandparents, there are pictures of them where they would have picnics at gravesites.
In the cemetery. Well, you know, that's a really wonderful subject, and I think we could do that, a whole show on that. I was going to write a long thing one time about graveyard picnics.
Oh, yeah?
There's a whole resurgence of that in, mostly on the East Coast, because that's where it started and that's where it was in Victorian days, but it used to be that people would gather on Sunday or Tuesday or whatever day they wanted to. It wasn't All Souls Day or anything, and just go have dinner with grandma. They'd go to church and then they'd come home. I mean, if it was on a Sunday, and then they had packed up tables and linens and crystal and roast turkeys and big production meals. They go to the cemetery, lay it all out, and spend the whole day with grandma and grandpa. And one of the reasons that that happened was this started in the Victorian days because there were no public parks. There was no place for people to go play and hang out. And if you think about those old cemeteries, you know, they have beautiful sculptures and gorgeous landscaping and trees and flowers, and it's a beautiful place to be. So, you know, not everybody's been skeered.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, if there was an impact by people dying young. Like, there were so many people. Like, we died so young.
That's true.
Like, if you were around at 40, you're doing pretty good.
Actually,
50.
I read that. And part of it was death was so frequent. And there was the pandemic in 1917 or 18. I don't want to be the bad guy.
No, it was
17
through 18.
Was it? Okay, thank you.
I think even through 19. Yeah.
And so there was a lot of death and a lot of eating in the cemetery at that time. So, you know, I don't know. I read an article about two young people in Massachusetts who have taken it upon themselves. They found a old, terrible old cemetery in terrible disrepair. And it's very old. And they decided that they wanted to raise funds for this cemetery, and they're refurbishing it. And they're doing it by having food, festive food things. I can't think of what I'm trying to say. We're almost running out of time. Yeah. What else do we want to say really fast?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, when first time I went to Boston, and there are all these cemeteries within the city of Boston because it's such an old city.
Oh, yeah.
The headstones there were so unique to me, unlike any I've ever seen, because they had skulls on them. Like, I'd never been anywhere where, like, there were a lot of skulls with wings on them.
Really?
At the top of the masthead of the tombstone.
Carved?
Carved, yeah. So it would be like these...
Like the granite stone with the granite.
Yeah, and it would be this skeleton head.
Wow.
A sort of a rustic carving with wings.
People do rubbings of the artwork.
Oh, I don't know if they did that.
They do that in gypsy cemeteries. There's a gypsy cemetery in Portland. Oh, we have to talk about that another day, but it's a wonderful, wonderful trip.
Okay.
And I think we're out of time. And thank you for listening, everybody. And Susan and Mr. Tom, thank you for your help.
It's my pleasure.
Your good ideas and your laughter.
Fun.
And Mr. Truman O'Brien, thank you for your infinite patience. If you could see what it's like for him to try to teach me how to run this board, you would laugh. I know you would.
It's his star quality.